Só. Deixa eu só. Brandon, is this thing working?
Can you hear me? How about that?
All yours.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, hello.
We're not hearing on Zoom.
My name is Steve. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to Owen asking me to speak. And normally I speak to a much easier audience. It's the alcoholics and the Al-Anons. But I hope I can say something that that's helpful. I guess if I have a message I want to say is that hope is alive and that change is possible. And that's the truth of my life. It doesn't happen for everybody. But I'm an unlikely case in my own estimation. And in my wife's, who's here with me, her prior estimation. Alcohol, we do a format in AA, which is sort of the chronology of the progression of our illness. And it is characterized by, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so I'll sort of stick to that, if you don't mind. That's what I know. So I don't know when this awkwardness came into being for me. I have some ideas. My wife points out that I moved many times, schools, and product of a couple divorces over the time. But being the new kid in school was maybe the most prominent idea in my mind was a urgent desire to belong, to feel like I was part of things. And so I feel like it developed in me a capacity to read people, to try to understand groups and to figure out what it is that you want. And if I could figure out what it is that you want, I would try to become that. And so that I could feel like I belong in that group, like I'm accepted. And so it was a great effort on my part to figure that out as I moved from school to school. And at the age of 14, I moved to a new school. And the guys that everybody seemed to pay attention to and that I wanted to become acceptable to, they drank and they smoked cigarettes. So I took a pack of cigarettes and went in my bathroom. I was 14. Went in the bathroom and taught myself to smoke. Came in a non-smoker. I left a smoker, and it was grueling. I couldn't believe anybody did this, but there you are. And my first experience with alcohol was a similar thing. I went out with a group of guys. We had a bottle of ancient age bourbon and a Coke. And we sat in the middle of a wet baseball field at night and passed the two around. I could not believe people put this stuff in their mouth. But after a few minutes, I understood exactly why they put this stuff in their mouth. Things changed. You know, I felt this giant weight slide off of me. I felt like I was free. I didn't care so much what you were thinking. I didn't care so much if I actually fit in. I was the version of Steve that felt the better version, the more expansive one, the one that felt capable and confident. And I thought, why doesn't everybody do this? I get it. I see it in the movies. I see my parents. I get it. I understand why you're doing this. And from the first time I drank, I knew I was going to be doing serious drinking. That was, I'm going to become a drinking man and all that that might involve. I sort of suspect, now this is, I'm an old man now, looking back at that the time, that there was this delamination of my identity that took place during that time. There was a self that I wanted you to believe in, and I knew was a lie. And then there was the inner self that visited me in the early mornings and in my solitude, and it was harsh. It was very vocal and very harsh. And when I drank, the miracle of drinking was that that inner part sort of disappeared, and I became that outer part. The expression in AA is grandiosity with an inferiority complex. I became the grandiose figure. I became what I needed to be to function out here. And it was delightful. I mean, I have to say, it was my solution. It was not my problem. I had another problem. This was the solution for me. But as my drinking progressed, and we say the arc of alcoholic progression is fun with problems. And problems started showing up that created shame and remorse and regret. And, so the difference between those two identities kept widening with my drinking. I felt worse about myself in my private moments, and I needed to build a bigger narrative about who Steve was to explain why I'm getting kicked out of the class, or I'm in trouble with the school, or my behavior was so bad in front of my friends. But my story, unlike the common story in AA, which is a gradual progression of these diseases, has a very notable punctuation mark in which things really changed for me. I was 23 years old. I went to school here at Berkeley. I did not want to grow up. In those days, some of you are old enough to remember that there was a generation of great hope and revolution that was sort of said that all the rules are questioned and we can explore new possibilities. Well, that was a source of complete confusion for me. I didn't know where I fit in the old version, which was sort of understood. In the new one, where all the structure was erased, I didn't know at all. And so adulthood was very elusive. I didn't know how I would migrate to becoming a mature version or an adult version. Anyway, maturity is out of the question, but an adult version of Steve. I didn't want to. The killer words of my life were discipline, commitment, responsibility. Those were like, oh my God, why would I do that? You know, I mean, that seems so odious and heavy. And so I didn't want to grow up. And I could not see my future at all. And I came to the conclusion in my quieter moments that maybe what was missing in my life was a serious woman to help migrate me to. She would look at me with sufficient love that I would become who I might be. And I would know how to, I think I saw that in the movies actually, but I might become the next version, shed the skin of my young adulthood. So I met a woman and she was wonderful. She was very charming, very bright. I tried wooed her and finally got her to agree to go away with me for a weekend, a romantic new beginning. We were going to drive up to Mendocino on Highway 1, and we loaded the car with all the accoutrement that is necessary for that kind of adventure, and music, alcohol, marijuana, food, We drove up Highway 1 that night, and sometime around 9 o'clock, I think, or in that neighborhood, I had been drinking the whole way up. I got drunk. I lost control of the car at a turn and went off the freeway and over a cliff and some 150 feet into the ocean. And as a result, this girl died, and I was thrown from the car. Yeah, 5 seconds before that happened, there was music and laughter, and then somebody put the wrong reel on the movie. And in any case, the campers saw the headlights go off the cliff and were there quite quickly, soon enough to find me and pull me out of the water, but they didn't find her for some time, and ultimately she drowned. So for a person like me, that event was decisive. It wasn't going to work out. The guilt that I felt was off the scale, intolerable. I got arrested for felony drunk driving, felony manslaughter. I should have gone to prison. I was ready to go to prison. I thought maybe if I went to prison, I'd lose some of the guilt. But they screwed up my blood sample randomly, and for whatever reason, I didn't get bound over to Superior Court, and I was free. So, but I wasn't free. I had this event in my mind that I wasn't sure what people do. I know that some of you have had tragedies in your life, and you have to find a way to put them somewhere inside of you where you can reconcile with this. And I didn't know, except that shove it in your socks. That's what you do. And maybe there's redemption if I grow up. I do grow up, and I get a real, like, a serious job, and I try to act like a serious guy. And I went to law school, and I drank my way out of it. My drinking was the answer to that problem, too. It was the way that I could sit and not feel as bad as I did and think about what happened and try to find a explanation for why this was an acceptable thing, and that my responsibility in it was somehow I could be exonerated from. And it was, I spent a lot of time replaying and revisiting things that never really changed very much. But my drinking took another level. It stopped being a social integrator and started to become a medicine to achieve a level of oblivion. And out of that, I started to go about my life and do it as best I could. Some wonderful things happened. That was 1972 that happened to me, and I spent the next 10 years drinking and trying to act like a regular person, and I did good enough to make some gains in my life. I got some help from my family. I met a wonderful girl along the way who comes from an alcoholic family, and so wasn't as alarmed as one might be by my erratic behavior and my heavy drinking. And we had a child, a wonderful child, and good things happened in that period. But my drinking was progressing. And so my drinking, 7 years into our marriage, I'm still drinking, and my behavior is getting worse. I can remember a couple of incidents. I wonder if Celeste will remember a couple incidents of coming home and crying. And I remember I was crying on the couch, and Celeste stepped out of the bedroom to say, what happened? You know, and I said, I don't know. Or the time when I, you know, I mean, I was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, our literature calls it. I would be alternately sweet and apologetic and, you know, full of promises, and then angry and destructive and bitter. Which one showed up? Take your pick. I have no idea what caused one or the other, but they were happening. And Celeste had had enough. I mean, it was, and I knew it too at some level. And she went to her first visit to Al-Anon, and kept a suitcase packed in the front hall closet to make her getaway. And I started to look for answers because I could tell things were falling apart. My look good was threadbare. People, if you look closely enough, I think you could see right through to the inner turmoil that was way too prevalent in my consciousness. So I started to finance, and it led me around in a roundabout way through therapist to AA. And I thought I heard what AA was about. I got sober on April 17th, 1982, and I started going to AA meetings shortly thereafter. And I thought I saw what this is about. If you smoke cigarettes and you want to quit smoking, you're addicted to cigarettes. I'm addicted to alcohol. The way that you break the addiction is a complex of changing habits, changing the crowd you go to, staying out of slippery places, you know, and the further you get away from the last cigarette, the further you get away from the last drink, you become well, and it no longer speaks to you, and you no longer have the temptations appearing in your life with the same energy, and so you're safe. That's what I thought AA said. It said nothing of that kind, but that's what my worldview allowed that AA was saying, because I didn't understand any of this spirituality and God stuff. That was out of reach for me. So I, on the force of what I gathered and what I got and the improvements in my life, I stayed sober for a good chunk of time from 1982 to 1992. But I did drink again. And I drank on what was a celebration. Things were going so well. I put some money in a startup and it was going to make us rich. Aren't I smart? And we're going to celebrate. And I figured the things I heard in AA was that when you take that first drink, you arrest your maturity, your development. That's what happens. And that the coping mechanisms and the maturity, which was defined as the capacity to capacity to defer gratification, that I must have, in the 10 years of doing this, cultivated some maturity, right? Right. Of course I did. And I'm going to be rich. That's the proof, right? And I didn't get rich. I drank, and it was amazing to me how quickly and how familiar things unraveled. That relation, that investment disappeared. The things that I had been working on changed. I was disconsolate in a way that I forgot how. It says in the doctor's opinion in the big book, these men lose their confidence. I'd lost my job and now I had to find one, and I'm drinking every day and I'm flipping through remember the old Sunday papers that had about an inch of want ads, of help wanted ads, and I'd flip through that. And by the time I can't find myself anywhere. And I'd be shaking and I'd be thinking, you know, what a failure. Imagine going to, I couldn't pick up the phone, let alone go to an interview. It was, I didn't know any way out of this. One of the working titles of the big book was A Way Out. That's what I needed, a way out. I needed to become somebody else. And I thought of, I had suicidal ideation. I thought maybe the thing would be for me to just check out. This didn't work. And one thought I had was, how would you do it if you, you know, I mean, for argument's sake, how would you do it? And I said, well, I'm not jumping off any building because that's really scary. And poison is way too slow. I might change my mind and I'd still be, oh my God, stop, stop, stop. You know, that'd be horrible. But a gun in the mouth, that would do it. But if I did the gun in the mouth, my brains would be all up the wall and my kids would come in. I now have two. They'd come in and see Dad and they'd be scarred for the rest of their life. I love these kids. I don't want to do that to them. So I went off to buy another bottle and study the problem. And I walked by a garage sale, and for sale right there was a motorcycle helmet for $1. I'm no dummy. You put on the motorcycle helmet, and then you blow your brains out and save the kids the trouble, you know. Just that I bought the motorcycle helmet was actually one of the clearest demonstrations that I was in deep trouble and that before I do anything else, I better go back to see if AA can work a second time. And I heard from the guy who I saw at one of my first meetings, he said, Steve, you're back? And I said, yeah, I had almost 10 years, but I'm back. And he said, but you're new. And I said, yeah, but I had almost 10 years. I just need to do it again. And he said, it's like this, Steve, if you are stacking blocks and you put the first one down catawampus, you might be able to stack 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then the whole thing falls down and you'll swear it was the 10th one that made it knock down. And I got his message that I hadn't started off in the right place. I hadn't done it. So it led me to another experience of this program, which I'm so grateful I did. So unlike me to be willing to say, show me, teach me, to be teachable. Most of us alcoholics have such closed thinking. We can't even let in a new possibility. And this idea of spirituality and of a power greater than myself, that how could that take on any meaning for me? And much of my first couple years was trying to find out, what is it? I mean, I feel like my life has got this lost quality to it, and where am I going to find this? And I got some help with these things. One of them said, your second step, I want you to pray. Second step, it came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, how do you come to believe? I think you come to believe based on the evidence. If I don't have the evidence, what do I do as a substitute? You know, pretend I have the evidence? And he said, no, you get the evidence, you pray. You pray and you ask God to reveal himself to you. And I thought, he said, what you're missing is an experience that things might actually feel differently about your life. He said, the division that you haven't made is between psychology and spirituality. You have them completely devoid. They're not devoid of each other. They're connected. If you have a spiritual awakening, things will feel different. Well, I believed that I was absent of a purpose. I was absent of some direction that I was supposed to be in. I don't know what we're doing here. I woke up in this body, for crying out loud. I don't know what we're supposed to do. I just want to feel good. But it turns out I need a direction. I need some purpose. I desperately need it. to feel like I belong, to feel like it's good, to have this change of heart that's available, you know? And so I did the steps, and for me, I had a slow process of coming to believe and filling up with the beauty of this program where people reveal their honest selves. Who are these people? They talk about their failings with laughter. They talk about their fears. They talk about all these things and they're okay. That was the stuff I had, was deep shame associated with. I'm not going to talk about that to anybody. I barely can think about it by myself. So I think I found my tribe, and they were talking in a way that I used to drink to try to get free to talk about the inner life. There was a level of intimacy that was available that I thought I'd only really known when I was drunk, when my frontal lobe was anesthetized, you know? So I found this incredible thing, and I've been a real AA. I dove in the deep end and I've stayed there. At some point in my business life, Celeste supported me in making a change, and I became the administrator for the East Bay chapter of AA. And I'm the one paid employee in the East Bay. And it's the best job I ever had. I felt so lucky to get it. It meant sacrifices and changes for us and risks. But I was so lucky that it was offered to me, and second, that we had the courage to do it. And so I became a working part of this community. And it's really, it's now that I've been retired for several years, the end of 2018. I didn't know how to be retired. I didn't know what you're supposed to do. I thought it'd be sort of like vacation, but it was, every day started looking the same, and I'm not very self-disciplined, but I had AA, and I started throwing myself more actively into service and into, I do a lot of hospitals and institutions. Part of my amends for the death of this young woman was to go to prisons. So I've been doing a lot of prison work. And I go to homeless shelter and to the county detox. And I feel like there's something that I have to offer that is invariably fills my heart, which is to try to extend hope to the people that are in those places who are as hopeless and as lost as I felt. And what a glorious thing to be able to have. You know, I know that when at the end of my life, when they ask, what was the deal? It was to try to make a difference and to have something that is of such value, which is this program. I didn't invent any of it, but to be able to offer it and to try to help somebody into it who's in a suffering place has been a great honor, a wonderful thing. I'm so lucky I found it. Thanks for listening to me.